The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, the good news is we made it through February. Welcome to March. It is a Wednesday. No, today's Thursday. It's Thursday, the 1st of March. Oh, my God. You know, sometimes it seems like time is going very quickly, and the other times it's just at a standstill. It has to do with the velocity and the ferocity, I think, with which we're being hit with news, with items. I'll tell you one thing that Donald Trump has said and said over and over again that was true.
The heads would spin. Your head will spin.
Your head will spin.
Your head will spin.
My head is spinning. Today is one of those days where there's just so much going on that I don't quite know where to focus. So I'm checking my email about an hour ago, and I get Politico puts out these playbooks. They do it like three times a day. So the noontime one comes out. And let me just read to you the first couple of paragraphs, and you'll see why my head is spinning so much. They write, buckle up. The president announced he was slapping tariffs on steel, 25%, and aluminum, 10%, imports, even though many of his top advisors are opposed to it. Capitol Hill had no idea what he was planning, and his party's elected officials don't like the policy. The New York Times reported the Senate Intelligence Committee has accused the Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee of leaking Senator Mark Warner's text messages. Senate Intel Chairman Richard Burr denies this to CNN's Manu Raju. Here's the good news. The administrator of the EPA just gave up his first class flying under pressure from lawmakers and the media. He said he needed to fly at the front of the plane for security reasons. And the HUD secretary is canceling an order for a $31,000 dining room set for his office bought with government funds. So that's good. The president called his attorney general's decision-making a disgrace. The president is again down a communications director as Hope Hicks resigned. Here's one we hadn't heard about. The ambassador, the U.S. ambassador to Mexico, is leaving her post to, quote, move on to new challenges and adventures. There's that. And Republicans have found themselves completely at odds with their party's president on gun policy. And then they write, what a town, and it's only Thursday. Yeah, so it's just, and that's not even the half of it. I've got tons more for you in today's What's News. And I guess, you know what, why not? Let's just get right to it. Because there's so much. And the thing is, I can't wrap my brain around it. You know, the first story that I have up in What's News, you know what, let me do this. And
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
So the first story, the lead story, is the newest big news of the day, that the president announced today that he'll unveil steep tariffs on imports of steel and aluminum products next week, a move that could have major repercussions for global trade. The reason it's next week is because he took everyone by surprise. Nobody knew he was going to do it, and his advisors are against it. Trump said he'd set tariffs at 25% for steel and 10% for aluminum imports. The president's move is expected to trigger immediate legal challenges by U.S. trading partners at the World Trade Organization and invite retaliation against American exports. Trump also ignored pleas from his chief economic advisors and companies that are heavy users of steel and aluminum, including automakers, who warn that higher prices will hurt their sales and potentially lead to layoffs. In 2002, by the way, According to the Washington Post, the last time the U.S. imposed steel tariffs, steel users blamed the measures for the loss of up to 200,000 jobs. By the way, the last time I checked, the Dow was down somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 points. Okay. And the thing is, I just don't trust this guy. I don't know what the right answer is on this. I heard Sherrod Brown, senator from Ohio, applauded Trump's move, while a lot of Republicans are screaming about it. I don't know what the right move is, because I'm no expert on steel and aluminum tariffs, but I do know that I don't trust this man to make any decisions. That's what I know. NBC News is reporting that special counsel Robert Mueller is actively investigating whether the president knew about the hacked emails from the DNC before they were publicly released.
Special counsel Robert Mueller reportedly is looking into when and how Donald Trump learned emails from the Democratic Party had been hacked by Russian operatives during the 2016 presidential election. Multiple people familiar with the investigation tell NBC News Mueller's team is asking witnesses pointed questions about whether Trump was aware emails had been stolen and also whether he was involved with their release. Last January, U.S. intel officials concluded Vladimir Putin himself ordered the operation that ultimately hacked the email accounts of the Democratic National Committee and Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta. Those emails were disseminated to the public through the WikiLeaks website starting in July of 2016. Mueller is said to be asking specifically about the following public overture that Trump made to Russia just days after WikiLeaks began publishing the emails.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press.
What's so unusual about this story is that there are so few leaks that are coming out of the Mueller investigation that to find out one road that the questioning is going down is unusual. Good to know they're going there. It seems like a no-brainer to me. All right. On Tuesday, White House Communications Director Hope Hicks testified before the House Intelligence Committee, sort of. She apparently didn't answer a lot of questions, but she was there for 9 hours. She did admit to telling, quote, white lies for the administration.
According to the New York Times, White House Communications Director Hope Hicks told the White House Intelligence Committee yesterday that she has occasionally had to tell white lies. White lies, or as Melania calls them, vows.
White House Communications Director Hope Hicks reportedly admitted to investigators that she told some white lies on behalf of President Trump. Yeah. Yeah, then Hicks admitted that that was a white lie, and in fact, she actually makes up all the time.
She did acknowledge that she sometimes tells white lies for Trump. Well, duh. Telling lies to white people is what got Trump elected.
You knew that one was coming, right? Yeah. Thank you, Stephen Colbert. Then yesterday, Hicks announced she'd be resigning from her position sometime in the next week or two. The New York Times' Maggie Haberman explains why. Whoops.
This is a grueling and in many ways terrible job for almost everybody who is working in the White House right now.
I bet.
And so I think that if you go to that, that is the main reason. Look, Hope Hicks has been thinking about leaving for a really long time. I realize that there's going to be a lot of assumptions that this all is from yesterday and her time on the Hill. All of my reporting indicates that it's not, that this had been something that has been in discussion for a while, and that essentially she decided there was no perfect moment to leave. She had done what she wanted to do. She had conceived of this gun forum last week. She had worked on tax reform. And she had, you know, sort of accomplished what she could. She never became of Washington or a denizen of Washington, was never part of it. And she's, interested in moving on, essentially. Most people, as you know very well, do not last in these jobs under normal circumstances for endless amounts of time. These have been like dog years.
They've been like dog years. See, that's the point I was getting at earlier when I said it seems like, you know, time is moving really fast, but then again, it's like at a standstill. It's dog years. Now we need to talk about Trump news years. Chuck Todd, of all people, once again raised some important questions about these lies. You know, we know that White House press secretaries and communications directors lie. But to have someone, especially in the Trump administration, admit it, this is a big deal.
Hope Hicks announced that she plans to resign. This one day after she told the House Intelligence Committee that President Trump sometimes requires her to tell lies.
Requires her.
Just white lies. Think about that. The White House communications director admits that she lies. Lies. Whatever the color, to the public. No one has attacked the credibility of the press more than President Trump and his White House. And when confronted with an inconvenient fact, well, you know the drill.
Just for the media, the fake news back there. Fake news, I call it.
Fake news.
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 Fake, 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 fake.
Fake news.
It's fake. Phony. Fake.
Fake news. And now this White House admits what we all knew to be true, that much of what it tells us is fake.
Yep.
So how are we supposed to know when the White House is telling the truth?
You don't.
How do we know when it's lying? How do we know when the White House is lying, whether it's telling a white lie or something worse? By the way, we believe all lies matter. Was it a white lie when President Trump said there was no collusion with the Russians? Was it a white lie when he said there was no obstruction of justice? Was it a lie when he said he was going to drain the swamp?
Yeah.
Hire only the best, never groped women, wouldn't benefit from his tax cut. You get the drill. New York Times has cataloged what it says are President Trump's supposed lies from his inauguration through early November. And these are just the ones we know about. What about all the others?
All the others.
All lies matter.
All lies matter. I don't know that I'd like him appropriating that saying, but it's true. You know, how do you differentiate? I just take it as they're always lying to us. I don't believe a word they say. In a one-hour televised meeting with a bipartisan group of senators and congressmen yesterday, the president stunned viewers by embracing gun control, lying, right? Because, well, we'll get to it, and urging lawmakers to resurrect gun safety legislation that's been opposed for years by the NRA and the vast majority of the Republican Party.
I'm going to write the bump stock, essentially write it out. So you won't have to worry about bump stock. Shortly, that'll be gone. I like taking the guns early, like in this crazy man's case. I'd just like to ask Joe and Pat, in your bill, what are you doing about the 18 to 21?
We didn't address
that. We don't change that.
Okay. Are you going to leave that?
That's whatever you want to do.
I think you're going to have to iron out that problem, because right. I'm asked that question more than almost any other question.
Makes
are you going to 21 or not? Some of you people are petrified of the NRA. You can't be petrified. They want to do what's right, and they're going to do what's right. I really believe that. And they do have great power. I agree with it. They have great power over you people. They have less power over me. I've been here for a little more than a year. What surprises me more than anything else is that nothing's been done for all these years. Because I really see a lot of common ground.
You can buy a Tech Nine. I mean, you can buy all these weapons.
Well, this is what you're going
light
to have
triggers,
to discuss.
Many
Joe.
Bullets.
Yeah. Joe and Pat, you're going to have to discuss that. You'll sit down with Diane and everybody else, and you'll come up with something. I'd rather have you come down on the strong side instead of the weak side. The weak side would be much easier. I'd rather have you come up with a strong, strong bill, and really strong on background checks.
Do you believe him? I don't. But it went on. In this exchange with Vice President Mike Pence, Trump suggested that law enforcement should have the power to seize guns from mentally ill people or others who could present a danger without first going to court. Now, I'm all for taking away the guns, you know. Again, if it were up to me, I'd take away the guns. But he does not understand what due process means.
In meeting with governors earlier this week, individually and as a group, we spoke about states taking steps. But the focus is to literally give families and give local law enforcement additional tools if an individual is reported to be a potential danger to themselves or others. Allow due process so that no one's rights are trampled, but the ability to go to court, obtain an order, and then collect not only the firearms, but any weapons in the position
or
of that
might
individual.
Take the firearms first and then go to court, because that's another system. Because a lot of times by the time you go to court, it takes so long to go to court to get the due process procedures. I like taking the guns early, like in this crazy man's case that just took place in Florida. He had a lot of firearms. They saw everything. To go to court would have taken a long time. So you could do exactly what you're saying, but take the guns first, go through due process second.
take the guns first, go through due process second. Then it's not due process. He makes my skin crawl. Just everything about the man makes my skin crawl. That's not due process. And again, I'm all for taking away the guns. You see someone who looks iffy, and this shooter in Parkland definitely had red flags. I'm all for taking away the guns, but there's no law that allows the police or the authorities to do that. And Trump just does not understand. He doesn't understand the way things work. And I don't believe him for a second. Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota pushed for protections against domestic violence, and he was open to that too.
6,000 women in 10 years were killed by a partner, whether it was a spouse, a boyfriend. 6,000. That is more than we lost the brave troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. And so just doing something on this background check issue and using that as a base, and then I would like to add some of these other things we've talked about, I think would make a major difference.
So if you could add that to this bill, that would be great, Diane. If you could add what you have also, and I think you can, into the bill.
Diane Feinstein.
Can you do that?
It's talking about the assault weapons ban.
Some of the things you're not going to agree with.
Yeah, if you help.
Well, no, I'll help, but can you add what Amy and what Diane have? Can we add them in? And I know you can add what John
has. I have another domestic violence bill that's very narrow, and it's about dating partners, and a number of states have just enacted it with Republican support.
We're going to get it passed. Yeah. We're going to get it passed. If you can add domestic violence paragraphs, pages into this bill, I'm all for it. I think it's terrific if you can do it. It can be done. That can be done, too.
He's so full of shit. He's such a liar. And so Chris Murphy of Connecticut went back to background checks in the gun lobby and I think tried to give him a bit of a reality check.
Our hearts go out to Parkland. We know, having gone through this in Sandy Hook, that community will never, ever be the same. And I want to bring us back to this issue of background checks, if I could, because I think there's real opportunity.
I agree.
There is no other issue out there in the American public today like background checks. 97% of Americans want universal background checks. In states that have universal background checks, there are 35% less gun murders than in states that don't have them, and yet we can't get it done. There's nothing else like that. Where it works, people want it, and we can't do it.
But you have a different president now.
Well, listen,
I mean, you went through a lot of presidents, and you didn't get it done. You have a different president, and I think maybe you have a different attitude, too. I think people want to get it done.
Well, listen, in the end, Mr. President, the reason that nothing has gotten done here is because the gun lobby has had a veto power over any legislation that comes before Congress. I wish that wasn't the case, but that is. And if all we end up doing is the stuff that the gun industry supports, then this just isn't worth it. We are not going to make a difference. And so I'm glad that you sat down with the NRA, but we will get 60 votes on a bill that looks like the Manchin-Toomey compromise on background checks. Mr. President, if you support it, if you come to Congress, if you come to Republicans and say we are going to do a Manchin-Toomey-like bill to get comprehensive background checks, it will pass. But if this meeting ends up with just sort of vague notions of future compromise, then nothing will happen.
We don't want
that.
So
nothing will happen.
I think we have a unique opportunity to get comprehensive background checks, make sure that nobody buys a gun in this country that's a criminal, that's seriously mentally ill, that's on the terrorist watch list. But Mr. President, it's going to have to be you that brings the Republicans to the table on this, because right now the gun lobby would stop it in its tracks.
I like that responsibility, Chris. I really do. I think it's time. It's time that a president stepped up, and we haven't had him. And I'm talking Democrat and Republican presidents. They have not stepped up.
And so he's saying he will. Then he goes on to chastise the sitting members of Congress there for being petrified of the NRA, which they are. So I guess in this instance, I applaud him for calling them out.
Yeah, I'm going to lead, but we're all going to lead. We're going to get this done in a bipartisan manner. I'm not even worried about 60 votes. I really believe that 60 votes, 60% meaning, should be so easy.
Should be
100%. Chris, did you have something?
No. I think you underestimate the power of the gun lobby. So.
No, I'll tell you what. The reason I had lunch with the NRA on Sunday, I called them. I said, you got to come over. I said, fellas, we got to do something. And they do have great power. I agree with that. They have great power over you people. They have less power over me. I don't need.
Sure.
What do I need? But I tell you, they are well-meaning. And I said to them, very nice, I said, fellas, we got to do something. We can't keep restricting, and we can't keep, we have to do what's right. When it comes to mental health and other issues, I said, we have to do what's right. And I'm telling you, I think they're there. I think they're there. Some of you people are petrified of the NRA. You can't be petrified.
Yeah, and he went on to talk about how, you know, you guys are scared of him. I have no reason to be. Well, they've all taken money from it. Well, not all. Not all. Most of the Democrats have not taken money from the NRA. A few have. We'll talk to Howie Klein about that again today, along with some other things. But, you know, Marco Rubio took over $3 million from the NRA. But Donald Trump's campaign took in over $20 million from the NRA. $20 million from the NRA. And he says he's going to stand up to them. I'll believe it when I see it. Again, this is the administration who tells us lies. Now, admits to telling us white lies. I'll believe all of this when I see it. And one last story before we move on. The New York Times broke this last night. They're reporting more trouble for Jared Kushner. Just days after having a security clearance downgraded, comes reports of massive loans to the Kushner company following White House meetings. Isn't it interesting how that works? The New York Times reporter, one of the reporters who broke the story, Jesse Drucker, explains.
Right. So there's two different loans that we wrote about. One of them is from Apollo, which is a big private equity firm. And one of the founders of Apollo, an executive there, is a guy named Josh Harris, who over the course of the year last year had a number of meetings with the White House, including meetings with Jared Kushner, including meetings about a possible job with the administration. Now, he didn't get a job with the administration, but in November of last year, Kushner Companies got a $184 million loan from Apollo. And, you know, by the standards of both Apollo and Kushner Companies, that is a very sizable loan. It's basically triple the size of the average loan that Apollo's real estate group gives out. And it's one of the biggest loans that Kushner Companies received all of last year. And it was for an office building in Chicago in which Jared Kushner remains invested.
So I mean, all that talk of Jared Kushner divesting himself or separating himself from his family's company, he is still personally invested in that building?
Yeah, so I think, you know, this is kind of a common misconception, right? So when Jared Kushner took the job with the Trump administration last year, he stepped down from his position as chief executive officer of the company.
He did.
But he only divested a very small portion of his ownership stake in the company. He sold some portions of his stake in the company to a trust controlled by his mother and benefiting his siblings. But for the most part, he is still very heavily invested in Kushner Companies, including invested in the building in Chicago that was refinanced with the loan from Apollo, and also invested in a series of buildings in Brooklyn that we haven't talked about yet, which received a $325 million loan from Citigroup last year. And that's significant because that loan took place shortly after a White House meeting between Jared Kushner and the CEO of Citigroup. So, you know, in both instances, you're seeing Jared Kushner meeting with executives in the White House, and then sometime after those meetings, the companies that those executives work for, run, or help to run, are giving very sizable mortgages to his company.
Unbelievable. It is unbelievable the depth of the corruption in this administration. You know, as critical as I was of the Obama administration, and I was critical because they could have been so much better, there were no scandals. There was none of this nonsense. There was none of this. Needless to say, my blood pressure was a lot lower then, and my depression wasn't as severe. This is making us all nuts. Now, today, there was some kind of like a 15th anniversary celebration over at the Department of Homeland Security. It's been 15 years since that agency has been up and running. And White House Chief of Staff John Kelly, who went into that job after being the head of the Department of Homeland Security, spoke. And there's something quite, well, truthful about what he said there.
Just open by saying I have almost no right to be up here on this stage. I mean, I was in the department.
You have every right to be here.
And I miss every one of you every day. I went.
Knowing laugh there, huh? Wow. But that's not even the part. That's not even the part I'm talking about.
Truly, at 6 months, the last thing I wanted to do was walk away from one of the great honors of my life, being the Secretary of Homeland Security. But I did something wrong, and God punished me, I guess.
No, I think if there were a God, God punished us all by having these people running the country. Unbelievable. And on top of all that, the Arctic is at the highest temperature ever at this time of year. It's March 1st. It was like 65 degrees in Ann Arbor, Michigan yesterday. There's something wrong. So we're going to get Howie Klein coming up in a few minutes. There's a lot to talk with him about today, including the fact that Tuesday is primary day in Texas, the first primary in the 2018 elections. And the DCCC did a hit job on a progressive candidate in one of the Texas districts. So Howie is promising us the inside story on that. He said it's even worse than we imagined. So that's coming up. But I thought, I don't usually run it during the show, but because things are the way they are, we'll take a time out for the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Back with Howie Klein in just a few minutes on the Nicole Sandler Show at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
It's Thursday, March 1, 2018.
Pruitt believes God commands us to take care of the environment. And that also means to use what he has provided.
EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt uses the Bible to justify exploitation of natural resources.
But I need you also to be worried about human health.
At the same time, Pruitt moves to eliminate office that studies the impacts of chemicals on children. A new study finds communities of color disproportionately bear the burden of pollution. ExxonMobil withdraws from massive deal with Russia, plus good news and bad news for the environment in the courts.
All of that good news and bad news straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Arming 20% of them, as Mr. Trump suggested Thursday, would mean more than 700,000 people with guns in schools.
It's no wonder the NRA likes this solution. It involves buying hundreds of thousands of guns, and that's their solution to everything. They probably deal with climate change by pointing a Glock at the ocean and daring that motherfucker to rise. And it's worth noting...
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, sad news. Russia and ExxonMobil are breaking up?
Yeah, it sure does look like it. ExxonMobil announced Wednesday it is formally withdrawing from a massive joint venture with Russia's state-owned oil company Rosneft because of international sanctions that have halted projects to develop Russia's untapped oil reserves. The deal was signed by former Exxon CEO and current U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. Last year, the Treasury Department fined Exxon $2 million for violating the sanctions with that contract. Bloomberg News reports that Exxon will post an after-tax loss of $200 million as a result, but that losing access to Russia's vast reserves is likely to harm Exxon's long-term efforts to increase production.
So sad.
Meanwhile, in an interview with the Christian Broadcasting Network, Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt said that he believes God wants humans to exploit the planet's natural resources and wants him to deregulate the fossil fuel industry.
Of course he does.
The biblical worldview with respect to these issues is that we have a responsibility to manage and cultivate, harvest the natural resources that we've been blessed with. To truly bless our fellow mankind.
Good God.
But Pruitt, of course, focuses only on fossil fuels and ignores the impacts in pollution, environmental destruction, and climate change, and ignores the free and clean natural resources called the sun and the wind that are also part of creation.
Yet why isn't Scott Pruitt harvesting those?
It's the polar opposite of the stewardship philosophy of Pope Francis. In an interview with the New Republic, theology professor Professor Jamie Schaefer of Marquette University said Pruitt's fringe beliefs are, quote, not a reflection based on biblical scholars' findings.
Well, knock me over with a feather.
And Pruitt's interpretation of the Bible doesn't appear to include protecting actual people. Pruitt has spent the last year rolling back pollution standards on behalf of polluting industries. This week, the EPA's own scientists have released a new study showing that in 46 U.S. states, minority and low-income communities bear the highest burden of air pollution in the nation, far more than white communities, and are disproportionately affected, leading to increased risks of asthma, heart disease, cancer, and other illnesses. But that's not all the Scott Pruitt news. He also proposed this week shutting down the EPA's research arm dedicated to studying the impacts of chemicals on children's health. In recent years, research grants funded by the National Center for Environmental Research have discovered arsenic in infant rice formulas and identified neurological effects from flame retardants and toxic pesticides. But Pruitt is proposing to eliminate that office to cut costs.
Just like the Bible commands.
Finally, some good news and some bad news for the environment in the courts. First, the bad news. The federal judge that Donald Trump accused of bias for ruling against him and his defunct Trump University this week cleared a major obstacle for Trump's controversial border wall with Mexico. U.S. District Judge Gonzalo Curiel ruled this week that the administration does have the legal authority to waive major environmental laws like the Endangered Species Act and the Clean Air and Clean Water Acts to expedite the wall's construction.
And the good news?
Well, a different federal judge has rejected the Trump Interior Department's efforts to delay the waste reduction rule that required the oil and gas industry to reduce harmful emissions of methane from operations on the public's lands and pay royalties.
So there's that.
At least there's that.
For much more on that and all of the other stories we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
All in all, it's just another brick in the wall. All in all, you're just
this is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Yeah, it's Thursday. That means we get together with Howie Klein of Down with Tyranny and the Blue America PAC to talk about politics, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Unfortunately, it's mostly ugly. Hey, Howie.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi. So we're almost there. Tuesday is primary day in Texas, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And there's already been early voting going on. There's a story that people have been asking me about, and I don't know a whole lot about her, but a woman named Laura Moser, who is a progressive running in, I think it's the 7th district, just outside of Houston.
It's the 7th district. It's West Houston and the suburbs just west of Houston.
Okay. And she actually, I mean, you come on here every week and you tell us about the nefarious things that the DCCC does in the name of, I don't know what. I don't, it just doesn't make sense to me how they actively go against some Democrats to try to elect the more Republican-like so-called Democrats. It doesn't connect in my brain because it makes no sense. Here you have a real progressive, and they actually went on the attack, literally went on the attack against this woman. We haven't spoken about her. What do you know about Laura Moser?
Well, I know Laura. I mean, I don't want to go as far as saying Laura's a friend of mine, but kind of a friend of mine. And I've known her for a little bit of time. And Blue America didn't endorse Laura, although we came close and we thought about it. We found that there was another candidate running who we liked more. But we like Laura, too. I mean, you know, that happens sometimes. And very often when there are more than one progressive race, we like to stay out of the race and let the voters decide. But in this particular instance, the other candidate, whose name, by the way, is Jason Weston, he is a renowned cancer doctor. And in fact, my cancer doctor is the one who introduced me to Jason and insisted that we endorse him and carried on and carried on. But Jason is a great candidate. And he's also someone who can win in a district like that. You know, he does a pretty good presentation. His ideas are, you know, solid, progressive ideas. Her ideas are just as good. But she isn't someone who I thought had a real good shot at winning this district. Not as good as him anyway. You know, she's got some things going for her, and she's not real. She didn't seem to me to have to have it down on in a way to communicate her ideas very well. Mm-hmm. He was much better at that, but she wasn't bad. I mean, you know, like I said, we considered it. Now the problem, of course, is that there are two, you know, bad corporate Democrats in this race who are raising oodles of money. Laura has raised money and Jason has raised money. So they both have enough. They don't have the same amount of money that the corporate Democrats have. And the party, in the form of the DCCC, wants one of the corporate Democrats to win. And they were nervous that that Laura could draw votes from one of the corporate Democrats, and they decided to do a character assassination of her.
Wow.
So there are two ways to look at it. The common way that most people looking at it is what I just said. They wanted to destroy Laura. They've been known to do that before. The DCCC does that. They usually don't do it this publicly. I mean, they put out a memo. They made it very, very clear. They did it really loudly. Usually, this is important. They usually sneak around and they do it very, very privately. They send these kind of memos out, never to the press, so it never gets in the media. People don't know they're doing it. And they send it to institutional Democratic donors like labor unions, for example. They send it to big donors who are likely to give money. But they never let it out to the press. So this time they did. This time they made a real big fuss about it, bringing down a lot of antipathy on the heads of the DCCC. So people were sort of curious, how did that happen? Why did they do that? You know, I mean, one of the things that happened, by the way, is that since the DCCC did it about 2 weeks ago, a little less, Laura has raised $100,000.
Wow.
I mean, she told me personally she raised $100,000. And she may have raised more by now. And that's because people hate the DCCC so much that not even knowing about that race, not even knowing about Laura, they just flooded her with money, small donations, just because they hate the DTrip so much. And they felt that the DCCC was being so unfair. Now, you know, the DCCC, what they said to do the character assassination, they did a few different things. So this is more background, and I'll get into what I think the real reason for this was, because the common wisdom, which I just explained, I don't think that was the real reason they did it, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But let me get a little background here.
Okay.
So there are two more trains of thought about what this was all about. One of them is that the staffers on the DCCC, the way they line their pockets which I've explained before. So I'm talking about how they become rich personally.
Mm-hmm.
They become very, very wealthy, not from their salaries at the DCCC. So they'll work at the DCCC for a cycle, and then the next cycle they go out and they work at a consulting firm or they start their own consulting firm. So while they're at the DCCC, they're sending lots and lots, millions of dollars to these consulting firms, money that the DCCC spends or money that they tell candidates to spend with these consulting firms. And so the people at the consulting firms make a lot of money that way. Well, 2 years later, if the staffer who is sending that money, sending that business to those consulting firms, they're at the consulting firm for a cycle or two, and then they're back at the DCCC. So it's a game that these people play. Now, the Republicans outlawed this. They banned it completely a few years ago, but the Democrats didn't. The Democrats, they still thrive on doing this. That is why the DCCC is the most corrupt organization in Washington. And I'm talking about millions of dollars. These people should all be in prison. And now this isn't the congressmen who supposedly run the DCCC, although I don't know for a fact that they're not, getting some kickbacks or something. I don't know. I literally don't know. But the staffers are all becoming wealthy from the, I shouldn't say all because some of them don't do it. But the big shot staffers have become very, very wealthy from this revolving door scheme, and it should be stopped. The way I found out about it was three members of Congress came to me complaining and saying they can't put their names. This was in, I think, 2008 or 2010. They said they can't put their name on this, but said they would guide me through a post. So I did a post on it. And if anyone wants to read the whole thing, it's very, very long. They can just go to my blog, downwithtyranny.com, and there's a little white bar on the upper left. And if you just type in DCCC, comma, corruption, that story will come up.
Okay.
Anyway, so that's one thing, the corruption. So, no. So they accused Laura. Laura's husband has one of these, consulting jobs, a consulting company. And they accused Laura of spending money with his company. Okay. So, in other words, they weren't spending money with these DCCC-approved companies. She was spending money on her husband's company, and they made the claim that that was corrupt. It also means that she's not putting money in their pocket,
uh-huh.
So it's very spurious reasoning.
Right.
The bigger reasoning was they said that she can't win in Texas. She's too progressive, and Texas voters won't go for her. That's complete bullshit. And what they then did was give an example, which, in other words, putting ammunition in the hands of Republicans or anybody who wants to ever defeat her for anything. And what they said was they said that she wouldn't go back to where she's from in Texas. She'd rather have her teeth pulled out. And when you just read that lightly, it sounds like she's talking about Houston. But when you look at it and read what the words are, she didn't say Houston. She said Paris, Texas.
Right.
Which is where she's from originally. That she wouldn't go. She would rather have her teeth pulled out than go live in Paris, Texas. Well, that's not that much of a problem because everyone in Houston would probably agree with her. Nobody wants to go live in Paris, Texas. It's like it's like Nowheresville.
Okay.
And she lives in Houston, Texas, a place that she loves. And so the DCCC sort of fooled around with that to make it sound like she was putting down Houston when she clearly was not putting down Houston.
Wow.
Okay. So that's the background on this. Mm-hmm. Now, let me get to what is possibly the real story here. So one of the worst of the DCCC staffers that I've ever met is a guy out here on the West Coast named Kyle Layman, K-Y-L-E, L-A-Y-M-A-N. So Kyle Layman was formerly, he's a very, very right-wing Democrat. He's really, really conservative. He's as bad as they come in that ideological thing. One more step to the right and he's a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And he believes in what he believes in. That's who he is. That's what he is. That's what he's always been. He was a chief of staff for a sort of, just an imbecile Democratic congressman named Raul Ruiz. Raul Ruiz was a doctor in Palm Springs, and he got lucky and wound up winning a congressional seat. He's kind of a nothing backbencher. He's a really sort of bad member of Congress. And Kyle Lehman was his chief of staff. Kyle Lehman left that job and went to work for the DCCC, and they sent him out to the West Coast to sort of run roughshod over the races out here. So his thing is he wants conservative Democrats. He believes in that, that he's a conservative. He wants other conservatives. He, like most of the people at the DCCC, hate progressives. I can't tell you how precise I am by that word hates. They hate progressives. They prefer Republicans to progressives.
Wow.
That's how much they hate progressives. They think progressives are the worst thing in the world, and they don't want them in Congress. And they would rather see a Republican win than see a progressive win. That's how bad it is. So Kyle Lehman has been recruiting all these like really shitty conservative candidates to run. And he was at the Democratic, the California Democratic Party convention in San Diego the other night, and he was at a bar. I think he was drunk, but I wasn't there, so I can't say for sure that he was drunk. And he blurted out in front of many people, who all of them called me immediately, so I got lots of phone calls, and he blurted out that the DCCC does not think they have any chance to win Texas 7. And this was not about Texas 7, it wasn't about Texas, and it wasn't about Laura Moser. Now, that sounds weird because I think they're going to win Texas 7, so that's a strange thing about this whole premise. But he did say it, and what he said is this. It wasn't about Texas 7, it wasn't about Laura Moser, it was about Orange County, where there are four seats, and there's very, very tough, hot primaries in each seat with lots and lots of Democrats running.
Orange County, California?
Orange County, California,
okay.
where he is based.
Ah, okay.
So Orange County, California has California in general, I should say, has a very odd primary system where everybody runs on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And the two top people go into the November general election. That could be two Democrats or it could be two Republicans.
Right.
So in a district where there's a Republican incumbent, it doesn't matter because other Republicans aren't going to win, and the Republican incumbent is going to get into the general election along with whichever the top vote drawing Democrat is. But in the districts where there is no where there is no incumbent, that's when a problem can develop because you can wind up with two Republicans and no Democrat. And that's what the DCCC says that they're nervous about, which isn't true. I mean, they are nervous about it, but it's not true that's the only thing they're nervous about, because in the districts where there are incumbents, they're forcing their conservative candidates into the race and doing everything they can to chase out progressives. They're undermining and undercutting progressives in the ways that they always do it. They haven't done yet what they did to Laura Moser.
Mm-hmm.
But Kyle Lehman has been saying is what they were trying to do when they smeared her so badly is they were sending a message to the California candidates, this is what's going to happen to you. If you don't do what we tell you, in other words, get out of the race,
wow,
you are going to get smeared like this. This is what he's told a whole bunch of people. So one of the candidates, and I don't want to say the name because people will know what it is if they're following the race, and if they're not following the race, it won't matter.
Okay.
And the reason I don't want to is because I spoke to the candidate myself who said that if anyone says what I'm about to say to you, if anyone says it, he will sue them. So several of the candidates are super rich, which means they're trying to buy the seat, and they've already spent millions of dollars. So I'm not talking about someone who puts in 50 grand. I'm not talking about someone who puts in 100 or 200 grand, which is a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of self-funding there.
Yep.
I'm talking about people who have put in over a million already,
right,
and will put in more than that. And one of them is this guy. And the DCCC says that they have, not publicly yet, they say they've got all the dirt on him, that you know, he's been involved in some very, very sketchy business things. That, in other words, they're trying to paint him as though he were another Donald Trump, mm-hmm. just a crook. And this move against Laura was a message to him and other Democrats that they're going to get smeared the same way they smeared her if they don't get out of the race.
Wow.
Right. So that's what the DCCC is up to. People need to be aware. I mean, they're sending out all these emails, you know, millions and millions of emails. And people don't know. They think, oh, yeah, you know, I'll donate some money because we want the Democrats to win and we want to beat Trump. And, you know, the Democrats don't send – the DCCC doesn't send this kind of mail out. They don't say these things that I'm saying to you on the phone. They try to just make themselves sound like, you know, we're the good guys. Send us money. And people send the money. And, you know, I suspect that the people who listen to your show are over it already. They don't send any money to the DCCC. But in case anyone is new who's listening, they should know, do not send any money to the DCCC. Donate to candidates directly. That's the way to do it. When you donate to the DCCC, the money, first of all, half the money gets raked off anyway and goes into their pockets and the pockets of their cronies.
And the consultants.
And they don't spend it well. I mean, sending money to the DCCC is like just flushing the money down the toilet anyway. They are a disaster. They are such a bad organization, and they run it so poorly. They, in fact, I was talking to a member of Congress the other day who said they can't even make the best of a wave. The wave is coming. The only time they can ever win is when there's a wave, and they don't make the wave better. They make the wave worse.
Right. Now, Howie.
And this is from a member of Congress.
Unbelievable.
A senior member of Congress.
Right. Wow. Now, is the DSCC as bad, the senatorial version of the DCCC?
No. No one is as bad as the DCCC, but they would both be graded F, but the DCCC is a lower F. They're both terrible. The DCCC is the worst. They're even worse than the DNC. I mean, all of them are terrible. The DCCC is the worst. By the way, you might be cheered to hear that the Republican equivalent of the DCCC,
yes,
the NRCC, they're terrible as well. I mean, it's so amazing to me that these organizations where there's millions and millions of dollars sloshing around, that they could be so badly run. But people have told me that that's part of the game. That's how people, you know, they make it all so bad and so horrible that people don't notice the money being stolen.
It's amazing that any good candidates actually run, that they put up with it. But thankfully, there are good ones that push back against this.
Right. There are good ones, and they generally don't run with the imprimatur of the DCCC. I mean, you know, when there have been waves in the past, it was generally the non-DCCC candidates were able to win and hold the seats. The DCCC candidates who came in on a wave, they never could hold the seats because they were such bad candidates.
Right.
So, for example, and I've said this before, in the last really huge Democratic wave is in 2006, over a decade ago, when Rahm Emanuel was the chairman of the DCCC, and his candidates were just miserable. He tried to defeat the progressive candidates, and he failed. The progressive candidates who won their primaries, he refused to help them in the general, and some of them won anyway, and they're still in Congress. And guess who's not in Congress? None of Rahm Emanuel's candidates got in 2000. They're all gone.
Unreal.
They were all defeated because the Democratic voters in their district saw what they were about. So these aren't even Democrats. This is a bunch of blue dogs and new Dems who voted with the Republicans all the time. So in the next midterm, which was in 2010, the Democrats in those districts, enough of them just stayed home and didn't vote. It's not like they voted for the Republicans, mm-hmm. but they certainly weren't going to vote for those terrible blue dogs. And they all lost. None of them are in Congress anymore. All of them are gone.
Right. Right. No, when the Democrats suffered big losses, the Blue Dog Coalition was almost wiped out.
Yeah, those were all Rahm Emanuel's recruits. And here is this moron Ben Ray Lujan, who's just trying to do exactly the same thing step by step. It's like he's got a coloring book in front of him of how to do exactly what Rahm Emanuel did. And so, in other words, he's not thinking about what's going to happen in 2022 when the next midterm is. He just wants to get all these blue dogs in now, and then they're not going to do anything good. They're going to water down anything that the Democrats try to do. They will water it down. I mean, I think last week we talked about this. You know, all of these corporations are dumping the NRA.
Right,
whether it's airlines or car companies, insurance companies, now even companies that sell guns. I mean, they are just, you know, pushing the NRA away. They're going against everything the NRA wants. Who's not doing that? The DCCC. I mean, for all their lies that they say, yeah, we're against the NRA, send us money. Well, they're recruiting people right now who have A pluses from the NRA. And who have records as state legislators of being 100% NRA voters. So 100% is a pretty big deal. When you vote for every single horrible piece of legislation that the NRA wants, and you oppose every piece of legislation that's trying to make the situation better, you oppose every one of them, what does that tell you about these people? What are they going to be like in Congress? And it's not like the DCCC is just supporting them. The DCCC is begging them to run. So, for example, a state legislator in New Jersey named Jeff Van Drew, the most conservative Democrat in the New Jersey legislature, the DCCC begged him to run. He didn't want to. He said, no, I'm happy where I am. I'll stay in the state legislature. I'm a big fish here. No, just come. We'll help you rise in Congress. You know, we'll pay for everything. We'll do everything for you. Just come. And this is the NRA's number one ally among Democrats in New Jersey. And he's their candidate now.
Wow.
And, you know, why is it that gun sellers are saying, we don't want anything to do with the NRA, we're not going to sell assault weapons anymore, we're not going to sell to people under 21, we're not going to sell big magazines,
right.
Big gun magazines, ammunition magazines, I mean. They're all saying no, that they're not going to do that, and yet here you have the DCCC recruiting people like Jeff Van Drew, recruiting people like Anthony Brindisi, recruiting people like Ann Kirkpatrick in Arizona. Loads of them. How is that possible? This is we're the Democrats. We're against all this gun nuttery, right?
Well, this is Ben Ray.
We're not.
This is Ben Ray Lujan's influence since he's come in. Where there used to be, if not in writing, there still was some sort of a litmus test where the Democratic candidates were pro-choice. Now all of a sudden, they don't have to be.
Right. And the Democrats, you know, they have always been working with the New Dems and the Blue Dogs, but they used to sneak around and do it and not do it openly. Now that, hey, you want to get endorsed, go get the endorsement of the Blue Dogs. Go get the endorsement of the New Dems. When you look at the list of DCCC endorsements, almost, not every one of them, but almost every one of them has been endorsed by either or the New Dems or the Blue Dogs. Almost every one of them. I mean, there's only one person on their whole list of endorsements that I know for sure is a progressive. Only one.
And who is that?
Lisa Brown in Spokane.
Right, we talked about her.
Lisa is great. And it you know, there's no primary. She's the only candidate running. So the DCCC endorsed her. But it actually surprises me that they do, because she's a real progressive and they usually shy away from that. But she's the only one.
Wow.
All of their other candidates are conservative Democrats. Almost every one of them is either a Blue Dog or a New Dem.
So other than getting the word out, which is what we try to do here every week, and voting for the progressive in the race, and you can find a whole list of them at the Blue America page, which you can get to from downwithtyranny.com. Just click on the Blue America box. I'll put a link up on my blog today as well. other than voting for the progressive in the race, how do people fight back against this? I mean, is there anything we can do?
Sure. I mean, you know, I mean, I encourage people to volunteer for the progressives who are running in near where they live, or they can even run, even do it in districts where they don't live. There's, you know, that's the magic right. of phones these days.
Yes.
You know what? Something just came through while I was talking to you.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I'm like in shock.
What's that?
I'm sure you do remember. You know who Phil Lesh is, right?
Yeah.
Right, from the Grateful Dead.
Right.
He was the bass player, the original bass player in the Grateful Dead.
Yeah.
He just maxed out to Randy Bryce.
Oh, wow. Randy, that's awesome.
Dash, the guy who's running against...
Sure, Paul Ryan.
Against Ryan. And here you have one of the original Grateful Dead guys giving him a maximum donation. I just read that as you and I were talking.
That's a great note to end on because we're out of time. But Phil Lesh of the Grateful Dead maxing out a donation to Randy Bryce at Iron Stash on Twitter. That's great news. Howie Klein, it's always disturbing to hear this, but it's stuff that we need to hear. People need to know. So thank you for all the information.
Thank you, and thank you for that nice song about Chuck Schumer in the beginning. I always love hearing that.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Howie Klein. I'll talk to you next week.
Bye, Nicole.
Bye-bye. And with that, we are done for the day. We'll do it again tomorrow.